This episode of Recovery Rocks is sponsored by SoberLink. And Lisa and I know that it's not just recovery that rocks, but waking up clear-headed rocks, remembering what you did the night before rocks, and so does establishing healthy relationships and accountability with the people that you love.
And we know that can be hard. SoberLink's remote alcohol monitoring system is designed to help you reclaim stability in your life and sustain a sober lifestyle. It's trusted by thousands of treatment professionals nationwide.
Click the link in our show notes to learn more about SoberLink and get $50 off your device. Shout out to SoberLink.
Hey, everybody. Welcome, welcome. It is Lisa, and I am here with my Forever Goddess BFF.
Hello, it is Forever Goddess BFF Tawny reporting live.
From New York. Today, we wanted to talk about a topic that I constantly struggle with, and I know Tawny and I have discussed she struggles with too, and it's come up over and over, and that is the pressure we put on ourselves and the expectations that we set on ourselves and kind of managing those. And I think for me, it was best articulated, and I know we've discussed this generally or a little, you know, in passing before, but not in as much detail of, I remember my very early days of recovery sitting in Cocaine Anonymous and seeing on the wall a sign, and it was right next to my head. It was like, you are not missing this sign. And it said, high expectations, low serenity. And I have to use that as a reminder, and I have always had to use that because, you know, we put, whether it goes to many of us, and we've talked about this on the podcast before about perfectionism and everything's got to be exactly right, about certain things that we think we have to achieve, and if we don't achieve them, there would be something wrong with us. That we would be somehow less than, and the, you know, the need to sort of, for me, the need is to remember a concept that is very big in AA world, which is humility. It's, you know, it's basically one of the steps is to, you know, it involves asking humbly, you know, and just to be able to ask humbly refers, you know, requires finding humility, right? And the phrase I really love around that is that, you know, we want to be friends among friends and workers among workers, you know, no less, no more than the next person. And I thought about it recently with just the way I expect all these things for myself, that, you know, a lot of it's out of my control. A lot of it's just, you know, too much. You know, it is, I get caught up in my own head when I don't manage my expectations and am not, don't approach expectations with humility of what, you know, I may or may not be able to do or see or whatever it is.
Well, you know, there's a great line. I don't know who said it, but you can do anything, but you can't do everything.
Yes. I love that.
You know, you can do, you know, anything you set your mind to, you know, there's a lot to unpack there, but just for the sake of what we're talking about, There is a big difference in trying to do everything, you know, like I speak to often with codependency, with burnout, with addiction to work. You know, there's a lot that I expect of myself. And I, you know, as Carrie Bradshaw would say, shoulding all over myself. Like, yes, you should be able to handle this. You shouldn't let that bother you. You should be able to do all four of these things at the same time with a smile on your face.
Right.
And I don't know what I am basing this projected image of perfection on or where it even comes from. But for some reason, I think that I need to do all of this shit And I don't, I really don't. And it takes, you know, almost like it took humility to admit that I had a problem with alcohol. It also mm-hmm. takes humility to admit that, you know, I look at my to-do list and I'm just like, this is not possible for a mortal to do in one day. Like,
your
this
to-do
is,
list makes my head explode.
Like, this is just not possible. And like you said earlier, it's just like I would beat myself up. I would think I was less than. I was a failure if I couldn't do all this stuff. But it's, you know, a lot of it is wanting validation from others, but also from myself. I want to prove to myself that I can do this thing. I want to prove to the haters that I can do this thing.
Yes. Yeah. I think, you know, the idea that it is, in a way, when you talk about validation, our need for validation, it's also sort of, for me, been in varying stages, a way of sort of punishing myself or proving in myself something. Like when I was drinking, I forced myself to go to the gym at, like, you know, 5 a.m. because then if I was able to go to the gym at 5 a.m, you know, I couldn't have a problem with alcohol. How could you do both of those? Right. And then it was forcing myself. It's another thing. I mean, exercise, I guess, is a good example for me, at least, for forcing myself, you know, once I got sober, you must work out, you must work out, you must work out because you can, because you're sober and you can, therefore you must. Right. And it goes back to that, you know, you can do anything, but not everything. Because all the things you can do when you get sober, right, they are big and they, you know, there's a whole bunch of options that suddenly become available when we stop drinking and we're not hungover and we're not spending time in our head beating ourselves up for our prior actions. We have to be careful not to start beating ourselves up for not taking every single action that we could possibly take, and recognizing limitations and being okay with that. You know, I would put so much pressure on myself to get in the best shape of my life because I wasn't drinking. Like, no.
Well, that and first, you know, nothing is more fun than pressure.
Right?
That unwanted pressure we put on ourselves.
And it's like with imposter syndrome, it's a story we tell ourselves. It's not an action. No one, when I got sober, was like, good, now get in the best shape of your life.
And it's like
it's ridiculous.
And what does that even mean?
Right.
You know, like, you know, back when I was a fitness instructor, I was in physically the best shape of my life because I was working out all the time and I was dangerously restricting calories. But I looked great. You know, I looked super fit. But I had disordered eating habits and I was binge drinking. So. Yeah. Now I would say I'm absolutely in the best shape of my life, physically and mentally, because I work out because I like it and I take care of my brain, which I never did before.
And if you were doing those things, working out because you liked it and, you know, doing it for your brain and all of that, that would be enough for you. The fact that you're in the best shape of your life is a bonus. That wasn't what you sought when you started saying, I want to, you know, be more focused on exercise because it's good for me in these ways.
Well, yeah. And it's, you know, the longer that I'm in recovery, the more I learn about myself, my mental health. And, you know, like you're saying, you're early in sobriety and you're like, you have to go work out.
I'm going to eat a pizza.
Do whatever you need to do. For some people, exercise and early sobriety is crucial. You know, for me, I signed up for my first and last half marathon when I was 6 months sober because I wanted something to hold me accountable. You know, it's more than just the running. It's you have to go to bed early because you have to wake up early and you have to eat, you know, you have to not just eat quote unquote healthy, but you have to nurture and nourish your body because you're putting it through a lot of physical exertion. So for me, exercising in early recovery was absolutely crucial. And it still is. It still is very important to me. But I had to find a healthy relationship with exercise and a healthy relationship with food. And, you know, we're talking about expectations. I think a lot of expectations get lost with I guess I'll speak from personal experience, my unwillingness to accept certain things, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, that's where the codependency comes in of I expect certain people to act a certain way because I don't accept where they are today. I didn't mean to rhyme. It just happened.
Yeah.
But you know, I've had to get to this point in my codependency recovery. You know, I go to Al-Anon, I read about codependency, I do a ton of this work, and learning the role that I play in certain relationship dynamics has been absolutely pivotal for finding realistic expectations of myself and others.
I love that you put it that way, you know, because the realistic expectations are, you know, what we have to find what they are for ourselves, and we have to figure ourselves out and learn mm-hmm. about, you know, who we are and why we do certain things and look at certain things, you know, in order to understand that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's when we have to accept ourselves
yes.
as we are today in order to have realistic expectations of who we are.
Yes. How is
and what we're capable of.
Exactly. Exactly. How is that? I'm wondering just how it's playing out for you now with such a big event. I know you've got the book coming out this year, and that's enormous. Mm-hmm. And that's the realization of a lifelong dream you've had. And it's a big deal. And I know when my book was coming out, I was very careful. And I don't know, you know, just out of self-protection, I had zero expectations.
Yeah.
My whole thing was like, I wanted to put this out. I needed to. This is sort of my baby. Like, mm-hmm. I don't have children. And, you know, I feel like this is my contribution to the world, and hopefully it helps somebody. This is my thing.
Yeah.
And that saved me, I think, from a lot. I mean, I can see how I could have set expectations differently. And, you know, I didn't out of fear. It was totally self-protection. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, this thing could get panned by the reviewers. This thing could not sell.
Yes.
People could come after me. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Like certain people did on things like, you know, with criticisms, fair or not. And, I was more like putting my protective armor on than I was busy getting excited. How is that for you?
I'm glad you brought that up because I've had to set some realistic expectations for what I expect from being a debut author. You know, so much of this of being a debut author is learning from people, you know, like you. And other friends that have published books before, learning from you guys. And also, you know, I've taken so many courses about the publishing industry. So I feel like I understand it pretty well at this point. And, you know, our dear friend, Anna David, who is a sober icon, published many books. Some of the courses I took were from her, and she told me that the average book sells 500 copies.
Yeah.
And that blew my mind. And in a way, it actually helped me lower my shoulders. I was like,
right.
I was like, oh, 500.
That,
I was like,
yeah.
I was like, I can at least sell 500 books. Like, I'm not worried about that. So like knowing, I guess maybe this is because I'm a journalist, but it's like once I know the facts and I can collect the data, then I can assess a proper expectation, you know?
Yeah.
And I also know how hard it is to get on a bestseller list. I know how hard it is to have a successful book. I know how hard it is for an author to earn out their advance. Like, I know that most authors don't earn out their advance. So now that I'm armed with these facts, I know I'm able to choose what this means, what publishing a book means for me. And for me, a successful debut book means a book that I wrote, you know, I wrote it.
Exactly.
I did it. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a success because I did this thing that I always wanted to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Anything else is just extra.
That's,
you know,
that's bonus. Yeah.
If it's a quote unquote successful book, great. Like, of course I want that, but you know, I think this is also where, you know, the serenity prayer comes in. I cannot control the success of this book. There's nothing, like, I can post about pre-orders. I can annoy my friends, ask them to leave Goodreads reviews. You know, I can definitely do that. But at the end of the day, I can't force people to buy this book.
That's right. Yeah.
Unless you're listening, take an action
and let go of the results. Yes. You're really in that phase.
I will say, though, if you are listening and you've not yet pre-ordered the book, now is a great time to do that. But it's tough. It's really hard. And I think, you know, have 7.5 years of recovery now. So I'm very in tune with my body and mind like I never have been before. And I can feel my body physically tense up with this new stress. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of excitement and quote unquote good stress, but my body is physically reacting to it. And so I do need to honor that and listen to that. So for me, that means massages, acupuncture, yoga, taking, you know, Sundays are very sacred for me. I don't do anything on Sundays.
I try not to text you on Sundays.
I recharge. Like, I try to not even have my phone on me. So, you know, it really is knowing what I need in order to show up during this crazy time in my life.
Yeah. Okay. I may blow your mind with what I'm going to say now. It makes me think of this expectations conversation, makes me think of something from Tara. Yeah. So I studied and continue to study the courses in Soul Tara, which is Lindsay Mack's work, which I hugely recommend. I love it. It's an inclusive kind of approach to tarot. It's very soul centered, and in Soul Tarot's reading of the sevens, the sevens in each of the four suits in the tarot, they describe one way to look at the sevens, just one way. There's, you know, any way that works, any way that speaks to you, but and one that I found helpful is that a feature of them is somebody that it's almost like expecting that some external force is going to fix everything, right?
Yeah.
In your life, right? So something's going to happen if I can just write that book, if I can just whatever, and then my life's going to be, you know, everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be fine. If I just get that job, if I, you know, just lose 10 pounds, whatever it is, then that's
I'm glad
the
you brought this up. Yeah, that is so real. And I'm experiencing that heavily right now because it's like, once I get the book deal, I'll be happy. Once I finish the book, I'll feel more accomplished. Once I get the book cover, then it's real. Okay. But once I meet with the marketing team and, you know, it's just, the goalpost keeps moving. And these are definitely, like, don't get me wrong, these are very exciting things and I'm really happy to be on this journey. But it's also, it just speaks to what you're just saying is like, you never arrive, you know?
Right.
There's an interview with Conan O'Brien interviews Jack White. This interview is probably 10 years old and I watch it probably once a year. Like, it's just them smoking cigarettes, just talking. And it's medicinal for me.
Send it to me.
I will. But Jack White talks about that. He's just like, I've never felt like I've arrived. And he kept, you know, he kept moving his goalpost of like, okay, I'm going to start the White Stripes, and then the White Stripes blows up, and then I'm going to go solo, and then I'm going to start these two other bands, or then I'm going to start this one band, and then I need another. Then he has three bands and a solo project, you know, and then he starts a record pressing plant, and then he starts another record pressing plant. So it's you're growing all the time. Your career is expanding with you. And I just relate to that interview so much and what he says about never arriving, because it all comes down to really the thesis of this conversation is where are your feet? Where are you today?
Yes.
And like what is a reasonable thing to expect of yourself today?
Yeah.
You know, look at your to-do list and just scratch like three things off of it. Just do it.
Put it down.
Know what I mean? Just move those to tomorrow, because you can't, chances are you probably have 15 things on your to-do list and it's just not humanly possible to do them all.
Right. Right. Like, I can't tell you how many times the reason I was cracking up when you were saying, I'll finally, when I get the book deal, when I get the whatever. I can't tell you how many times you have sent me texts that have been like, you know, from all of those instances, I got the book deal, I got the whatever, I finished, I got the cover. It's getting real. You kept saying, it's getting real. And every time I would text back to you, it's all happening. It is happening now. It's real, right? We've had that exchange on so many milestones.
Yeah. And I think the next milestone will be when the publisher sends me a box of books and I have a physical.
First you'll get the advanced reader copies.
The physical books, once I have those in my hand, then it'll be real.
Right. It's getting real.
And then when I have the book launch, it'll be real. And then, you know, then when I go to my hometown and promote it, then it'll be real. You know, it is real. You know, this conversation reminds me of Holly Whitaker's, you know, she wrote Quit Like a Woman, and she has a wonderful Substack newsletter called Recovering. And in it, she's talking about the writing process. And she talks about how when she's in it, she doesn't feel like she's in it. She's like, I'm not doing enough. Am I really even writing this book? I'm just throwing words on a page. And so, you know, she calls Laura McCowan, and they have a really beautiful, honest conversation. And Laura reminds her, like, this is the work. This is writing the book.
You're doing it.
You're doing it. It doesn't seem like you're doing it, but you're throwing words on the page and you're crying and you're frustrated and you're happy and you have this roller coaster of emotions. It's happening. This is it.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad I read that, because that's been playing in the back of my mind a lot this last year, or I guess 2 years since the whole book journey, but it doesn't always feel like you're in it when you're in it.
Yeah. And I mean, that is so perfect. Like, when I got sober, I had spent so many years, you know, knowing full well what a giant problem I had, but not being ready or willing or anything to do anything about it, but just because I felt like I couldn't, whatever. And I always thought, if I was just sober, my life would be perfect. If I could just get sober, if I could just stop drinking, if I just didn't have to drink these drugs. And then when I got sober, you know, it was like, it was time to be like, it's happened. I'm here. I'm in it. This is it. And realizing that, you know, that one event of putting down the drink, you know, it can always, there's always a next door, right? You can always say, I'm sober, but I'm not in shape yet. Or I'm sober, but I'm still smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
And the need to come back to, holy shit, I'm sober. And where are my feet? And all, you know, if we
period.
Don't,
I'm sober, period.
Right. The only thing, and I really had to remind myself all the time during the first year, the only thing I have to do perfectly today is not drink. That's it. If I don't drink and my head hits the pillow, I win. And, you know, that was really helpful to me. But there's this tendency, I think, that we have. And I know that you are so good because you've done so much work on figuring out how to do this, but you are also able to, at the same time, you're like, but I'm, you know, I'll feel this way, you know, when I have the books in my hand, but you still are able to put your feet, you know, remember where your feet are and say, holy shit, I have a book cover. Look at that shit. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's
and it's why gorgeous.
And it's perfect. Yes. And that's why it's so important to, you know, we can spend our life just wishing we had the next thing or, you know, thinking things mm-hmm. are going to be great if we had this other thing. But no, like we've got to be in today. Today is all we have. You know, we make plans it's and God even, laughs. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, so even on we a, have you know, to be in today.
We're talking about these bigger concepts, but this even comes up for me just even like with online shopping. I'm just I'm gonna be so much happier once I have this pair of pants. And then I get it and I'm God. Like, yeah, I mean, they're fine. Like they're comfortable. I'll wear them, but this didn't fix anything for me.
I'm still stressed out. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like buying the pants and like looking forward for them. Looking yeah, forward to them yeah. for a few days, like yeah, that gave me like some serotonin.
You got a little mileage out of that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
like do I just return these? You know, I don't even know.
Oh my gosh, I've been doing that a lot lately.
Yeah,
it seems like everything I order, I'm finally asking myself when I try it on, do I really like this?
Yeah,
and I've been returning stuff,
and it's like my body doesn't look like the models, like. The pants look different on me than they look on her.
Oh, that's a whole separate podcast.
That's a whole other podcast. So, okay. Obviously, we cannot have this conversation without quoting our favorite song, Hey yeah. Jealousy by the Gin Blossoms.
That's right.
The lyrics are just incredible, but there's one line that I think I say this every time. I should get it tattooed. If you don't expect too much from me, you might not be let down.
It's just perfect.
It's so good. It's so powerful.
If you think about it, the might not be let down. You still might be let down, but
yeah.
I mean, if
there's anything you can do today to lower your expectations,
yeah,
this is the sign that you were waiting for, Lisa and I. Like,
that's right.
You know, what can you remove from your to-do list or push to another day? What can you
or
accept?
Just recognizing what is and is not in your control, accepting that,
accept,
and not putting, you know, and appreciating today. Also, the Queen song with David Bowie, Under Pressure.
Oh yeah, yes. That that Vanilla Ice swears he did not sample. He's like, it's very different. I didn't sample that song.
Oh,
okay. Like, is nothing wrong with it. Just admit. Like, just admit that you
just own it.
So yes, this is the sign from the universe to acknowledge, you know, what you can.
Like, expectations,
accept what you can. Yes. What is it? High expectations, low serenity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of my therapist has a good line that I think we can end on this. If it's urgent, it's not spiritual.
Ooh. Oh my gosh.
Isn't that good?
I'm going to have to chew on that. We're going to need to circle back on that one.
Yeah. Well, we'll do another. I know when he said that to me, it kind of blew my mind. And I think about it all the time now where I'm like, if I'm rushing to do something, like, why am I rushing? Is this, you know, like what am I getting out of rushing to this appointment? Or, you know, it doesn't apply to everything.
Well, if you're trying to live in a place where you're grounded and you're being driven by, you know, your internal flame.
Yeah.
You know, then that's a great point.
Yeah. So we'll leave you on that note.
We'll see you next time.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available in bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.